The Senate will come to order. Will everyone in the Senate and in the upper galleries please rise for a prayer by our chaplain, the Reverend Gauck, and remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
In the first chapter of Proverbs, we read, "But those who listen to me will be secure and will live at ease without dread of disaster." Living God, help us this day to hear your word, understand it, its wisdom, obey your directions, and rest securely in your grace. Help us not to confuse our search for courage and love and wisdom with fame, fortune, or status, but help us to embrace what we have, your teachings, guidance, and counseling. In your holy name we pray, amen.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Please be seated. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Callahan, Chappelle Nadal, Crowell, Cunningham, Curls, Dempsey, Dixon, Engler, Goodman, Green, Justice, Kevenie, Kehoe, Krause, Lager, Lamping, Lemke, Mayer, McKenna, Munslinger, Nieves, Parson, Pierce, Ferguson, Richard, Ridgway, Roop, Schaff, Schaefer, Schmidt, Stouffer, Wasson, Wright-Jones.
Senator from St. Francis. Madam from Clay, Senator from Clay. Senator from the 22nd. A quorum being present, the Senate is in session. Madam Secretary, please read the journal.
Journal of the Senate, first regular session.
Senator from the 23rd.
Mr. President, I move further reading of the journal be dispensed with and the same be approved as though having been fully read.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The senator from Stoddard is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I request unanimous consent of the Senate to allow members of the Missouri Sheriff's Association to enter the Senate chamber with sidearms.
Hearing no objection, that request is granted.
Mr. President, also, if I could, I'd like to please refer Senate Concurrent Resolution number 12 to the Committee on Rules, Joint Rules, Resolutions, and Ethics.
That Senate Concurrent Resolution will be referred. On the order of business, we are on introduction of guests. Introduction of guests. Senator from Atchison.
Mr. President, off to my left and your right, a group of young men sitting on the bench with their coach, David Fairchild, the football players from Hamilton High School in Hamilton, Missouri, and I'd like for the body to understand what makes this group of boys special. Not only are they back-to-back state champions, but last year they were state champions in 1A, and this year they're state champions in 2A. It just goes to show the great, hardworking young folks in North Missouri who continue to dominate this state in 1A and 2A football, and I would ask that the body please join me in welcoming this group to the Capitol.
Would the guests of the Senator please stand and be recognized? Congratulations. Let's welcome them. Further introduction of guests. Senator from Polk.
Mr. President, introduction of special guests. Mr. President, today it is my privilege and honor to introduce the Missouri sheriffs of this fine state and for what they do for our people back home. Just a little bit of trivia I might remind the body of. The sheriffs are the only ones in the state of Missouri that has total law enforcement authority above everyone else, including the Highway Patrol, including the FBI. They're the ones that serve the papers back home for us in the court systems. They're the one that bailiff for our counties back home and our people back home. They work the homicides of this state, and they do every aspect of law enforcement, which includes running the jails, and they fight for our people back home every day and for our people up here. The other thing I'd want to mention, it was great to be a colleague, to be one of them, standing with them many times in uniform, to do what the privilege I've been able to do. And one particular sheriff in there that took my place from Polk County, for you people to have put up with me every day, you're going to have to blame him, because he's really the one that run me out of the county years ago on that. But it's a great honor to have the Missouri sheriffs up here today in the chamber of the Senate. Thank you very much.
Would the Senate please welcome our Missouri sheriffs. Thank you for all you do every day for us and our citizens of the great state of Missouri. Further introduction of guests. Senator from the 14th.
I have some special guests here today. Participating in Community College Rally Day, today we have four community colleges located in mine and four other areas, three other areas, the 4th Senate District, the 7th Senate District, and the 15th. St. Louis Community College at Florissant Valley in my district. We have here today our president, Marcia Pfeiffer, board trustees, Craig Larson, and auxiliary services manager, Laura Stevens. Here representing Forest Park, which is located in District 4, we have campus president, Dr. Cindy Hess, vice chancellor, Carla Chance. From the auxiliary services, Christy Hart, and students, Ashley Holmes and Jonathan Edwards. Visiting from District 7, the Wildwood campus, we have President Pam McIntyre, Vice President Patrick Vaughn, and Auxiliary Services Manager Ellen Goh. Lastly, we have visiting from District 15, from the Merrimack campus, we have with us today newly appointed President George Wasson, Vice President Lynn Crawford, Auxiliary Service Manager Kevin Metzler, and student Edward Ellersman. Would the body please welcome our guests today from the St. Louis Community Colleges.
Great. Would the guests of the Senator from the 14th please stand and be recognized. Thanks for coming to Jefferson City. Further introduction of guests. Can we please keep the volume down as we go through introduction of guests? We have a lot of special people here that deserve recognition. The senior senator from St. Charles.
Thank you, Mr. President. Introduction of special guests. And you are correct, Mr. President. We have some very special guests here today, including today is Hospice Day at the Capitol. So in the upper gallery in red, we have some of the great working people and volunteers, and also people that provide their time and their talent to care for those in their last stages of life, that provide a great service for many Missourians. So I'd like to welcome everyone in the upper chamber. Also, a special recognition to Robin Carnett's over here on the side gallery behind the wall of sheriffs, who's from Heartland Hospice. She's from St. Charles County, actually lives in O'Fallon. And also I have Janet Dobson and Julie Uglow from St. Charles County. They're also volunteers at St. John's Mercy Hospice. So would like to make them all feel welcome, especially for Hospice Day here at the Capitol.
Would all the guests of the senior senator from St. Charles please stand and be recognized. Thanks for your service. The chair would like to introduce some very special guests. As we know, we have a physician of the day that's here every day during the session. Different physicians from across the state of Missouri come. And today I'd like to introduce our physician of the day. If he would please stand. This is Dr. Curtis Long from Butler. He has been doing this for 45 years and is a tremendous family physician from back home. If you might notice his black bag that he has, he's had that since 1962. And it's just a tremendous honor to have Dr. Curtis Long as our physician of the day. And thank you so much for coming. Dr. Long. The chair would also like to recognize several guests from Johnson County. We have Adriatic Lacani, Donnie Cuck, and Esther Greer, representing Recovery Lighthouse Pathways and helping all of our folks in the need of mental health. If they would stand and also be recognized. Thanks for coming. Further introduction of guests. Further introduction of guests. On the order of business, petitions, memorials, and remonstrances. Resolutions. Senator from the 5th.
I have a resolution, Mr. President, and it can be sent forward.
Please send the resolution forward.
I request that the reading be waived.
Seeing no objection, the reading will be waived.
And ask for it to be printed in the journal. It has to do with a routine event that occurs here in the Senate every interim, and that's Missouri Girl State Program, and their session will be in the month of June. And they're basically asking permission to use the chamber on that date from 9 to 12:30.
The senator from the 5th has moved that the resolution. Okay. And she is asking for unanimous consent
yes,
to suspend
I am.
The rules
yes.
For the purpose of taking up the resolution for adoption.
Yes, indeed.
Hearing no objection, the request will be granted.
Thank you.
Senator, you actually now need to make the motion to adopt that resolution.
I move the resolution be adopted, Mr. President.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have adopted that resolution. Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 23rd, St. Charles County.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
We have none. We'll do that.
I've already recognized him.
We're on the order of business of reports from standing committees. Senator from the 7th.
Mr. President, I have a report from the General Laws Committee.
Please send that report forward, and Madam Secretary, please read the report when it arrives at the dais.
Mr. President, your Committee on General Laws, to which was referred Senate Bills 369 and Senate Bill 370, begs leave to report that it is considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attached do pass. Respectfully, Senator Cunningham, Chairman.
On order of business, concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions? Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you ask the Secretary or see if the Secretary of the Senate has messages from the governor? And if she does, I would ask that they be printed in the journal.
We do have messages from the governor.
Oh, we would prefer to read those?
And
well, let's read them.
And they will be read.
March 29, 2011, to the Senate of the 96th General Assembly of the State of Missouri, I hereby withdraw from your consideration the following appointments to office made by me and submitted to you on February 1, 2011, for your advice and consent. Jeff Shaper Cutter, Democrat, 5014 Willoughby Drive, Jefferson City, Cole County, Missouri, 65109, as a member of the State Tax Commission for a term ending January 23, 2012, and until his successor is duly appointed and qualified. Vice Jeff Shaper Cutter withdrawn. Respectfully submitted, Jeremiah W. J. Nixon, Governor.
Senator from Stoddard.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the appointment be returned to the governor per his request.
Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Seeing none, the senator is recognized to close.
I close.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. You have passed that motion. Senator from the 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of Senate Bills for Perfection, the Informal Calendar, Senate Bill 280.
We are on the informal calendar, Senate bills for perfection. Senate bill number 280, Senator from Howell.
Mr. President, I move that Senate bill number 280 with committee substitute be taken up for perfection, and I have a floor substitute.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. And, Senator, please send up your Senate substitute. Senator, the copies are being made and distributed even as we speak, so if you'd like to care to make the motion for the adoption of the Senate substitute.
Yes, Mr. President, I now move that Senate committee substitute for Senate bill number 280 be adopted.
The Senator from Howell has moved the adoption of the Senate substitute for Senate bill 280. Would you care to explain the Senate substitute?
It's not a consent bill, but we'll slowly work on it. This is an issue that's been around here for a long time. I've been here 15 years, and I remember every year dealing with some parts of this these types of legislation. And for the last few years, with the state in budget crisis, we've been looking at these items even more closely. This bill is a result of a lot of work by several people in this body. I want to thank a lot of my colleagues for a lot of their help. Many of them that have come over from the House this last year that have also dealt with this on the House side. On your desk or will be is the bill, but also a line by line synopsis of what the programs and how they're affected. A lot of this is a result of the tax commission that was set up by the governor. As we've talked about in the past, the state's 12 largest tax programs in 2010 authorized almost $588 million in authorizations. This is a instance of when it comes to budget, very hard to make budgets in this day and age. Some of the background on this bill, it also contains recommendations that were put forth by the Tax Credit Commission. For some that are not familiar with tax credits are a form of state incentives provided to businesses and individuals for their performance of a specified activity. The General Assembly adopted Missouri's first tax credit, the senior citizens' property tax, in 1973, and over the following decades adopted a dozen more tax credits programs to subsidize an increasing array of activities. As of today, there are 61 active tax credits programs in Missouri. According to the Missouri Senate Appropriations from fiscal year 1998 to 2010, tax credit redemptions have grown from 102.7 million to 521 million, representing a growth rate of 407% over the entire period, and an average annual growth rate of 17.4%. During that period, net general revenue collections have increased from 5.9 million to 6.7 million, which represents a growth rate of 13.9%. Tax credit redemptions have increased as a percentage of net general revenue from 1.7% in fiscal year 1998 to 7.7% in fiscal year 2010. In last year, the governor created a tax credit review commission. This commission was charged with reviewing the state's tax credit programs and look at recommendations for greater efficiency and enhanced return on investment. The commission held its first meeting on September 8th in Jefferson City with remarks by the governor to have a report back by Thanksgiving. As the governor explained and as the commission's work reflects, tax credits work best when they deliver on what they were intended for: putting people to work, boosting development, and building strong communities. The governor charged the commission to determine which tax programs were generating a good return on investment for the taxpayers in Missouri and which ones were not, and to provide fact-based recommendations for improvement to ensure that the state's tax credit programs We're actually creating jobs, spurring economic development, and building communities. The governor explained that the state of Missouri is looking at a budget gap for the fiscal year of 2012 that could exceed $400 million. But as state revenues have declined, spending on the state's tax credit programs have grown. The impact the rapid growth in tax credit expenditures has on the state's ability to fund other priorities, but he also recognized the need for the state to have well-calibrated economic development tools that provides job incentives and capital investments and generate a positive return to the state. The governor also admonished the commission to avoid disturbing projects that are already underway and tax credits that have already been awarded. Much of this bill is a response to the changes that were recommended by the Tax Credit Commission. There has been one change on the length of sunsets. The commission asked for six-year sunsets. Many who worked on this bill felt within a day of term limits, 6 years was too long. So most sunsets were changed from either 3 years on the non-economic parts of the sunsets and the economic parts were at four-year sunsets. This gives an opportunity for everyone, hopefully in this body, that worked on this piece of legislation to have the opportunity to review it. Is it a good bill? Yes, it is. Is it for the long-term financial viability of the state? Will everyone be happy? As in most pieces of legislation, everyone will walk away probably a little unhappy, which usually means that a good compromise has been met. Will there be winners and losers? And usually in every piece of legislation, there's winners and losers. But one winner that we won't talk about and won't be represented on the floor is the everyday guy that works, the man and woman that works to pay for all these programs. The person that gets up every day and works at a job or has a job or starts a company that doesn't do tax credits, that doesn't depend on government, that ends up paying the bills for everything that we do in this body, he will be a real winner. When we were able to fund education, when we are able to fund higher ed at what they need to provide, he won't have to pay more for the rising tuition rates. The person that doesn't get involved in government is still hit when government can't provide basic services and end up cutting those services. It usually ends up costing the forgotten man that's usually called here, usually ends up costing him the most. So he'll be represented here today by no lobbyist, but he is ultimately the one that will benefit most from this piece of legislation. What I've laid out before the body is a copy of the bill, but then also the text of what is in the bill, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions, but that gives you an overall view of what got us to this spot, and I would be glad to answer any questions. If not, I renew my motion.
The senator from Howe moves the adoption of Senate substitute for Senate Bill 280. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Newton, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to inquire of the senator from Howe.
Senator from Howe, do you yield?
I yield.
He does. Proceed.
Senator, there was a wise man that told me one time that incentives and tax credits, whether they're part of our, whether you like them or not, whether they're part of our what's happened here in Missouri for a number of years, they encourage somebody to do something positive, encourage to do something with a good result. Now, we may not like the fact that tax credits are there and all those things we do with our tax code, but in fact, is it not true that if we are going to compete on global economy, we're going to compete with the other 49 states, that we are in the game? Now, we can pull back and not have tax credits and not have other opportunities to incent business, do something positive. Do you not think that puts us in a more of a non-competitive mode? I mean, at least you are trying to make some certainty, granted that it's going to be sunsetting and capping, I think. And to your credit, I was probably your biggest nemesis on the other side of the building the last couple of years because I really didn't understand where you were going, and I couldn't, probably lack of expertise that I haven't been around here as long as you have, so. But the tax credits.
That makes me feel old. But, yeah, you know, I'm one of, you know, I don't think there's any secret that I'm not in favor of government programs, but we also have to face reality. As long as you have states doing this, you're going to have to compete with states surrounding you. Unfortunately, I believe a lot of the fix could be done at the federal level of putting all states on a level playing field, but as long as states are competing for jobs, you're gonna have the necessary, what I believe necessary evil. You have to have some type of way of enticing businesses into your state. The part that, and to be honest, I don't have a problem with the state investing in economic activity if it's a good investment and they're going to get their money, the state taxpayers are going to get their money back. You know, one thing I find out in government, it's always easier to use someone else's money, but I don't mind using taxpayer dollars if it's a good investment. And some of the programs under the Compete Missouri, the criteria that is set out requires any tax credit that we're doing to get a one-to-one return ratio to the state. I can't argue with the state investing in a program with the guarantee that we're going to get our money back. That's something we don't have now. That I believe to do a wise use of tax dollars, I don't have a problem with a one-to-one return. And the department will also have the ability, if we're not getting a one-to-one return, of doing a clawback to make sure we get our money back. So I think that's something different than we haven't had in the past, is the ability to make sure we have a one-on-one return ratio for the benefit of the taxpayer. The other thing is I've been very consistent on this. I think all tax credits need to have a sunset on them. I remember a few years ago, any new tax credit put forward had to have a sunset on it, and most of those sunsets were 6 years. Some of these programs do not have sunsets on them. It's ironic that the top two that cost the state the most amount of money do not have sunsets. Well, I think that if a program is working good, operating like it shouldn't have any problem living through a sunset process. And it also gives, in a day of term limits, people an opportunity every 4 years to review a program to make sure that the state is getting the bang for the buck that was intended. So I think they're with us. They'll always be with us, but there's a way that we can make them more efficient and operate in an efficient manner.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Newton.
To speak on the bill.
Proceed.
In the number of years that I've been in this building, I've tried to help create jobs when I could. And again, if we're going to incent industries, incent somebody to do something with a good result, our tax code is part of that highway to get that result. Now, there's some that's going to say that we need to dedicate a larger portion to education. I think we're all agreeable with that. But sooner or later, in this economy, in any economy, someone's got to go to work and create that pie to make sure that there's more people paying taxes and paying their share without having to raise taxes. In that mode, I think the senator from Howell has a good mix. Number one, I mean, the governor's plan, and I still think job creation ought to be a bipartisan issue. I think the governor's plan is somewhat reasonable in Compete Missouri. I think when you take some of these tax credits and combine them, you take quality jobs, enhance the enterprise zone, to build the development tax credit, or building communities and building facility, and combine them and give some discretion to economic development, director of economic development, as long as the House and the Senate has some oversight. Because in the past, discretion has been somewhat overused, and maybe discretion has been favored in some parts of the state and not others. And as long as the General Assembly, as long as the House and the Senate has oversight, that they can monitor discretion. I think discretion is part of any economic development plan with DED. I was not in favor of supporting as much discretion that was given in this, but I am because the gentleman from Howe, gentleman from Nottoway have convinced me that this is the position to go, and I am moving towards their thoughts and their goals. I think when we come off the back end loading of incentives and front load them, that puts us in the game with other states of what they're doing. And the economic development chess game is mostly played now in the South. If you look at the Carolinas, you look at Alabama and Georgia and Texas, Louisiana, I mean, that game is being played on a large dimension. Granted, there's been some discussion that some of these states have overused tax credits, and they may be the model of not the most appropriate way of using some tax credits and overuse some. I mean, we had Boeing the other day going from Seattle to the Carolinas, and by the way, they just kind of flew over St. Louis. I don't know why we didn't take a look at St. Louis and explain that north where they used to be years ago when I lived in St. Louis, had 30-some thousand people working out there, but it is what it is. Let me say that the Senator from Howe, Senator from Howe.
Thank you, Senator.
Has used the argument that if we are going to have a jobs bill at some point in time, we're going to have to come to grips with the incentive picture on tax codes, which is capping and sunsetting. Now, there is probably no more fiscal disciplinarian than the former Senator Chuck Gross, and he was, again, part of the Tax Review Commission. And the fact that he was part of it, I think, probably gives a lot of credibility, at least to me, to the fact that on some of his conclusions. Now, there was in the committee hearings some discussion on historicals that the Senator from Howe took the $75 million cap. That the argument was from some of those on the other side of the historic discussion that wasn't the recommendation. You know, the Senator from Howe has a good point. That is, there's going to be some winners and losers. That's unfortunate. I think the winners are going to be the taxpayer. I think the winners are going to be the job creators. I think the winners are going to be people that are trying to figure out how to make a living. I think most people want to pay their fair share of taxes. They just don't want to be overburdened. And the ability for us to compete on a global economy with the other 49 states is imperative. I think this puts a good start on our competitivity, the fact that we are taking some of these incentive and getting rid of them. I think that's not a real overstretch. I think the fact that the Senate and the House at some point in time will be able to review these, I think that's a form of budgeting. And frankly, I believe it's a legitimate conclusion of a hard work from many people in this body. And with that, I would ask the body's support of the Senator from Howe, and I would answer questions to his conclusions or anything else. Well, thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from Saline, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, it's my honor to introduce to the body.
Senator from Saline, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to introduce special guests, ask for unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Seeing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Senator, keeping me straight. Mr. President, it is my honor to introduce the 12 drivers that have been nominated Driver of the Year for Missouri. To give you an idea of what we're talking about here, there is over 419 years of safe driving experience. They're on both sides of the chamber here. They've driven 50.8 million miles. That's 2,036 times around the earth. There's been 12 non-chargeable crashes, which means no driver fault. There's only 4 chargeable crashes among this group. The accident frequency of 0.00296 accidents per million miles. They're military veterans. They're members of the Missouri Trucking Association Chairman Safe Driving Club. They're church board members. They're Boy Scout bus drivers. They're youth group volunteers, members of the disaster relief ministry team, and auxiliary police officers in this group. And if I could, Mr. President, I'd like to introduce them. Horace Joe Gordon and his wife Mary from Farmington, Missouri. Harold Thomas and Ron Humphreys, the safety director. Gerald Hulsey, Ralph Condiff, Archie McCourt, Raymond DeVolt, Glenn Horak and his wife Carla, Bernie Uhlhorn and his wife Sherry from Macon, Roy Richardson and his wife Penny from St. James, John Lusk and his wife Linda from Pittsburgh, Missouri, Ronald Hoover and wife Janet from Casper, Wyoming. They drive for Prime, and James Perkins and his mom Alice, who is a dear friend of mine, and would like the body to make them feel welcome. These folks give us a tremendous amount of service and safely, and be sure that that when you walk into your grocery store, there's something on the shelf. So we'd like the body to make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of the senator from Saline either stand, or if you're already standing, please wave, and let's have the Senate recognize them. And needless to say, we hope you have a safe trip home.
Yes.
Senator from Stoddard, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you. On your right and on my left here in the gallery, down here by the benches, I have some good people with us today from Poplar Bluff, Missouri. They're the leadership group with the Poplar Bluff Chamber of Commerce. Steve Halter is the director of the Chamber of Commerce there at Poplar Bluff, and he's brought with him Sheila Calvert, Tabitha Thomas, Sharon Kissinger, Faye McElroy, Pat Nobles, Regina Morris, Deb Halter, Mike Morton, Melody Malloy, Carrie Whiteley, Penny McGath, Michelle Witz, Stephanie Clark, Anita Freeman, and Randy Farrell, Jane Barron, along with Mark Mallory, and so Malloy. So we are glad to have them. They do a great job down at Poplar Bluff and for Southeast Missouri, and I'd like for the Senate to give them a great welcome.
Will the guests either stand or wave, and welcome to the Senate chamber. Senator from Phelps, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I request unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Mr. President, on your left and my right, on the upper gallery, I have a group of students from Rolla, a member of C-STAR. These are kids that are taking control and getting their lives straightened around, and we want to wish them the best and show our support, and I'd like to have them stand and be recognized by the Senate.
With the guests of the Senator from Phelps, please stand and be recognized. Thanks for coming to Jefferson City. Senator from Greene, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I also seek unanimous consent for introduction of special guests.
See no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On your right and my left, I'm very pleased to be joined today by John Twitty, who is the CEO and General Manager of City Utilities in Springfield. He was recognized earlier this morning in the House as an outstanding Missourian, and I would like to do the same here. Mr. Twitty is going to be retiring after 20 years of very distinguished service in June, and we're very pleased that he has been an excellent manager, very professional, very conscientious, and very fair in his duties there at City Utilities. Always has a helpful attitude, very friendly manner. And he actually served as the general manager for Rolla Municipal Utilities prior to coming to Springfield, where his wife also served as the Phelps County Treasurer and then later as the Greene County Assessor. His father also served a term in the Missouri House, and I know that he'll be able to look back undoubtedly over the past several years and reminisce about his very worthwhile accomplishments. One of those was serving as the chairman of the American Public Power Association that awarded him the Distinguished Service Award in 2009 as well. And as he goes on to what he has called new pastures, I would like to certainly wish him well. And at this time, Mr. President, I also would like to present to him a resolution which was previously taken up and adopted unanimously by this body. And I'd ask the entire Missouri Senate to make John Twitty feel welcome today.
With the guests of the Senator from Greene, Mr. Twitty, please stand and let's recognize him for his service to Missouri. Senator from St. Francis.
I'd ask unanimous consent to introduce some special guests.
See no objection. Proceed.
Thank you. In the upper gallery, all the way from Farmington, Missouri, St. Paul Lutheran School's up here, Pastor King and the group from St. Paul Lutheran School. I think they've already been over to the House, and we'd like the Senate to welcome here today.
With the guests of the Senator from St. Francis, please stand and be recognized. Thanks for coming to Jefferson City. Senator from Stoddard. Senator from Stoddard, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. We have with us today
Senator from Stoddard, for what purpose do you rise?
I'm seeking unanimous consent to see if I can introduce some very special guests,
Mr. President. Proceed.
Thank you. We have some very special folks with us today. They're with the organization called 40 Days for Life. 40 Days for Life. They come to us from all parts of the state of Missouri, and they have been very ardent supporters of pro-life measures, but also they support all the legislators in the House and Senate that look to protect the lives of unborn children. And we thank them for being here, thank them for all their efforts, and ask that the Senate welcome them today.
Would the guests of the Senator from Stoddard please stand and be recognized? Thanks for coming. Senator from Clay, for what purpose do you rise?
I have an amendment.
Please send the amendment forward. Madam Secretary, please read the amendment.
Senate Amendment 1, offered by Senator Ridgway to amend Senate Substitute for Senate Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 280, page 184, section 620.803, line 12, by striking the words, quote, published guidelines and may, close quote, and further amend line 26 by striking the word, quote, guidelines, close quote, and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, applicable rules and regulations, close quote.
Senator from Clay.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move for the adoption of the amendment. I've talked with the bill sponsor about this rule, or about this change, this amendment. It has to do with the rules process. We as a legislature and the general public, we do not want our administrative agencies to get in the habit of publishing guidelines because we don't have any input into those. Rather, they need to stay in the standard rulemaking process where everyone has a fair opportunity for public comment. So with that, Mr. President, unless there are questions, I renew my motion.
The Senator from Clay moves the adoption of Senate Amendment Number 1 to Senate Substitute for Senate Bill Number 280. Does any senator desire to be heard on that motion? Senator from Atchison, for what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the Senator from Clay.
Senator from Clay, do you yield?
I do.
She does. Proceed.
Okay, so you're putting them back to the J-CAR rulemaking process.
It's on page 184 is the only change that needed to be made. Everything else is just fine. But go to page 184.
And it deals with what? Is this the Compete Missouri program? Is that what this is?
It's the Compete Missouri training program. Because okay. It was new, I think they just didn't catch the correct rules language.
Got it. The rulemaking process that you're talking about is for the Compete Missouri a component of Compete Missouri.
Correct.
Got it.
Because this allows them to publish guidelines, and that's not appropriate.
Nope, I'm fine. Thank you, Senator. Okay. Thank you, Mr. President.
Further discussion. Senator from Lawrence, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I request unanimous consent for the introduction of special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On the couch to my right and your left, which I always have to actually go through in my head so I get the directions right, I have four good friends from Southwest Missouri, Larry Manning, Kevin Jones, Ann Hall, and Randy Henderson. They are with the First State Bank of Purdy and Monette, and I count it a pleasure for me to have a friendship with each one of them, and I'd ask the body to make them feel welcome.
Would the guests of the Senator from Lawrence please stand and be recognized? Thank you for coming. Further discussion. Senator from Cape Girardeau, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President, to inquire the Senator from Worth.
Senator from Worth. We need to have a clear path here. Senator from Worth, you yield.
I do.
He does. Proceed.
Thank you for yielding, Senator. And I was just looking at the map. Who has more counties? You or the Senator from the 18th?
I do.
You have more counties.
I have 16.
16.
Yep.
Well, it's a good thing that you, your wife, and your lovely family have that house on wheels so you can just
roll
through. Because a lot of people don't understand. Sometimes the chair will call you the Senator from Atchison, sometimes Nottoway. I think base camp's Nottoway, though,
you
right?
Know, everyone has their own belief of what a mobile office is. We just give it a different.
I understand. But base camp is Nottoway, and it just kind of rotates through all
Atchison
that.
Atchison now, it? That's right.
There you go. Well, I appreciate that, and I appreciate your inquiry as it relates to the Senator from Clay's amendment. As we all know, she's done yeoman's work on behalf of us in the Senate on JCAR, which is the Oversight Committee on Rules and Regulations that come forward as it relates to our departments in state government. A lot of people don't realize, but our CSRs are actually probably three or four times bigger than our statute books. and those have binding effect on people. So for everyone that gets kind of upset looking at, what are we at now, 21 volumes of statute books, I mean, it's probably a full bookcase of, are they red or orange? It's like an ugly red, though, isn't it? It's, kind of folders that have all the CSRs in it. And I think she's getting the correct language that we need to have to give her committee the oversight on all of that. One of the things I wanted to ask you about 280, if it's okay while we're on her amendment.
Sure.
Because my amendments haven't been distributed yet. We just got a copy of the substitute that's out there. I know that you've been part of this group that has spent a lot of time looking at the tax credit commission that, you know, ironically, that commission that the governor appointed. And to this point, do we know where the governor stands on anything that his own tax credit commission came out with, what he thinks? Or
I personally don't, but that would be the only thing I don't understand about the governor.
I would agree there. He puts together this elaborate commission. Now, mind you, he put on there term-limited legislators in Senator Bartle and Representative Fluke. Well, Fluke could have run again. He
right.
Just everyone knew. He
I think there was only one
so.
Current serving member. Only one member of the commission was currently a sitting member of the legislature.
Right. Right.
That's a senator from the 10th.
Right. And really, I don't know where they're actually going to be and what they're actually going to end up doing as it relates to all of that particular provision. Excuse me, in our inquiry, what I've gotten is a note from Senate Research, and they know where it's at. Just give me an amendment that goes all the way around everything else that the senator from Clay is doing. So, I mean, I'll be gutting crazy sections of the bill, so the bill won't make any sense. But just go ahead and give me an amendment that goes in around, because if the senator from Clay's amendment is adopted, it's going to block out as previously amended material all of Compete Missouri. So I'll take an amendment that word by word by word by word takes out Compete Missouri, so it won't be previously amended, and we're going to be here a while anyway. But anyway, I appreciate kind of this tax credit commission undertaking and work that they did, but we never heard anything in the State of the Union on what the governor thought or didn't think on the tax credit,
right,
with one exception. He came out and said he was against the elimination of the circuit breaker tax credit for renters. Am I correct in my recollection of that? I'm pretty sure
that he came out and said
that.
I don't remember the exact speech, but I know I've had a couple other members say that he has said that he opposes that provision.
Right.
Although, to be very candid, it is my belief that before the Tax Credit Review Commission made that recommendation, they at least had discussions with his office.
Right.
And were given the green light to move forward.
Well,
with it.
Actually, Senator, you and I met with the Tax Credit Commission probably
three times.
And quite candidly, it was during a meeting with you and I in the two chairs where I screamed and yelled and said, I can't believe you're not even as part of your purview talking about the circuit breaker tax credit. Because it's a total social tax credit program. It is the largest tax credit program in any isolated year. Now, in aggregate, it may not be the largest. Low-income housing may give a run for its money, but in annual appropriations, low-income housing is well over 100, or the circuit breaker is well over $100 million a year. $57 million last year was given as property tax relief to people that don't even pay property taxes.
Right.
So, and that's actually my bill. I actually filed that bill. I've been talking about it for 3 years. It seems this year, finally, people are looking at it and they found that that's a $57 million savings.
Real savings.
If you end that tax credit immediately.
Right.
And I think that that's scored in this bill. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And then you do other smaller changes, I understand it.
And let's back up a little bit, because you and I have been involved in this process for many years.
Yeah, sure.
And part of the fundamental debate has always been that because of the way tax credits are structured, they're structured as entitlements.
Right.
And when you have unlimited entitlements, which only a couple of the programs were, but with that scenario, you never had budget predictability, any type of accountability back to the legislature, or ever the time you never had the opportunity to review the program and say, is this program still meeting the underlying intended intent or what the legislature intended? And I would humbly submit, Senator, that the tax credit that we just discussed, the circuit breaker tax credit, if this body would have been forced to review that every 5 years, pick your timeline, it would have came up on the radar screen quicker that we're spending $50+ million a year paying renters who don't pay property tax.
Well, I think you're correct if it would be subject to an appropriations process.
Well, that's an annual review. I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, and that you guys aren't going that direction, and have chosen not to go that direction, going through any kind of appropriations process with those social, what I will call very limited ROI, return on investment tax credits that are focused on social benefits. And Senator, I'm willing to debate anyone all day long on whether or not historics, low-income housing are social nature.
Those are social.
Or if they're economic development. Because I would submit to you that any tax credit that only subsidizes temporary construction jobs is not an economic development tax credit from the standpoint of a return on investment, ROI, perspective, relative to the quality jobs, relative to the build program, some of those that induce careers in that direction. Historics, granted, you get temporary construction jobs, but Senator, I could have the same economic impact, probably even a bigger economic impact, if I would take all that money and build bridges and roads. Construction jobs are construction jobs. And what we've done within historics by stacking with low-income housing, we have resulted in these tax credits, still being able, my district, my example, be happy to talk about examples in everyone else's district, because I have those as well. But my district, the latest low-income housing tax credit project that went on there, it's a remodeling of Schultz School. It's where I went to school in seventh grade. And we spent $374,000 an apartment unit.
Per apartment.
Per apartment unit.
And how big are the apartments?
How big are the apartments?
How many square feet?
1,100, maybe. 800 to 1,100, depending if it's two-bedroom or one-bedroom.
Right.
And, Senator, I've been in them. They have stainless appliances, granite countertops. They have tiled floor. They have super finishes on everything, as they should. $374,000 an apartment unit. So I believe that those are social.
Right.
In their quote-unquote estimated impact on a direction that anyone has been able to go or anyone's been able to see.
Well,
same
Senator,
thing with historics. You and I have seen examples of what goes on with historic preservation, particularly when they're stacked with low-income housing and they're able to utilize all of those things as well. And so I would say that those are social. So if we say the circuit breaker is social, the low-income housing is social, the historic preservation is social, those are the big three. I can agree with that, can't we?
You just accounted for probably 70%.
Right. They 60%. Used to ask, and I've said it on the Senate floor before, they used to ask Jesse James, Jesse, why do you rob banks? You know what his response was?
That's where the money is.
Because that's where the money is. So if we're going to do anything with tax credits, I'm kind of focused on those big three. And with that being said, I would just kind of like to run through with you what you all, as part of this group that has rolled out 280, have come up with as it relates to, in whatever order you want,
sure,
historics, low income, and circuit breaker.
Okay. And you can, I'll let you pick which one you want to start with.
Low income.
Okay. Low income. Essentially what 280 is, 280 takes the recommendation of the Tax Credit Commission when it comes to low income. And specifically what I mean by that is what the Tax Credit Commission recommended is right now the way the streaming, because low income is a streaming credit. Therefore, what that means is that
10-year streaming credit.
It's issued at approximately $16 million per year for 10 years. So, $160 million.
Right.
What the commission recommended is taking the 10-year stream back to a 5-year stream.
Now, what does that do for you? Because I will admit, Senator, I think that gets you about, I had it written down here somewhere, $12 million? $12 million in savings when it resets on the 8-year or on the 5-year versus the 10-year?
So the reason for shortening the timetable is twofold. One, the net present value, you're not carrying it for the other 5 years, which, right, as we talked about earlier, one of the things that was eye-opening to me that I didn't realize is typically on the carry cost of these credits, the developer or those buying the credits, they discounted at an annual rate of somewhere between
10%. But that doesn't help. That doesn't help us as a state on the issuing level. That helps the syndicate get a better rate to the developer.
Today it does.
Yeah.
But by discounting it, you're not carrying it those extra 5 years.
Yeah, but Senator, you still have an $80 million cap over five years. So you're going to issue the same amount of tax credits that you're issuing now. Candidly, and the Senator from Boone and I rarely agree on anything, but my understanding is he pointed this out on caucus. This Brian Cave tax lawyer that's gone around saying that if you make these tax changes, it'll work, said the same thing 5 years ago. And 5 years ago, I asked him if he had an IRS letter ruling, and he said no, and in fact, The IRS has rejected this very scheme. You were there
yep.
in those conversations. So my question to that Brian Cave lawyer that Steve Stogel still carries around in his hip pocket, same guy he did 5 years ago, and he's still trying to sell us a bill of goods on all of this, that somehow those tax law changes are going to do anything. Now, to your credit and to this bill's credit, you haven't scored any of those tax law changes.
Correct.
Even though the Tax Credit Commission has put into their report that somehow miraculously over a lifetime that's going to save us millions upon millions upon millions.
Right. Their argument is that the discount, the percent that's discounted because you have to pay federal tax, using the tax law changes, if you would use this new mechanism that they're articulating, that would get you around that tax component.
Yeah, and that was specifically rejected in the East Coast. I can't remember what state, but
yeah, and that's what I think Senator from Boone referenced earlier, that we need to look at that court case that came out yesterday.
Oh, it came out yesterday, actually.
That was my understanding.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah.
So, all right. But anyway, so, I do agree that when you move from 5 years to, or when you move from 10 years to 5 years, just on the resets, you know, so you're issuing basically what you all have done, as I understand it. We used to issue, the senator from Boone got a little upset because the latest one didn't issue all 16 million, but on average, every year the commission issues 16 million a year for 10 years, 160 million on average.
Right.
Fluctuates up and down a little bit, but I mean, you and I can agree that on average, 160
That's
million
about
a year,
the number.
That goes into a grid 10 by 10, and that's what has produced right now, right today, without anything, a $1.3 to $1.4 billion, billion with a B, billion dollar issued, but yet unfunded low income housing tax credit liability.
Right.
So just starting from square one, we're not here. We're 1.3 to 1.4 billion
in the hole
on low income housing.
Right.
So with that as the context, my understanding is what you've done, instead of streaming them over 10 years, you've still given the 160 million that we've been issuing over 10 years. You've just condensed it to 80 million in the first five, 80 million in the second five.
Well, basically the gist of it was, Senator, the 80 million over five essentially represents, according to the Tax Credit Commission, what they articulated to us, approximately a 30% reduction in the overall low-income housing tax credits issued.
Well, but not to the state, it's just to the syndicate. So they're getting the savings out of the discount. Remember, we get like 21 to 23 cents on the dollar.
37 today.
37 today?
Over on a 10-year stream.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. That's up. That's up from my understanding.
If you go back 5 to 8 years ago.
Yeah, it was even worse than that.
It was in the 20s.
Okay, I'm relying on the last auditor study of that. And so you have better data.
Yeah, that 37 is what they brought last year.
Okay.
So it may have been worse before that.
Right. So and what we end up doing is we end up using the state tax credits and we issue more so that 37 cents actually equals a full dollar.
Correct.
So instead of looking at a dollar of projects, we say we know you can only get 37 cents on them, so we'll issue you X amount of dollars to move all of that up so that we, the taxpayers, end up eating it instead of the developers. And that's how we get $373,000 an apartment unit, $16 million in low-income housing tax credits. Now, I'm going to let you know a little secret. You know why they do that? You know why these developers do that?
Do it.
Because build these elaborate low-income housing apartments. Because in 10 years, the building reverts back to them. They kick the old people out, and they charge market rates.
15 years now. They changed it.
15 years? Okay, it used to be 10 years.
Right.
So now, 15 years. So in Cape Girardeau. This is the fiscal sanity that we allow to go on. And we'll still go on under this bill, just a little bit less of it.
That's right.
That we pay to the tune in Cape Girardeau of $370,000+ an apartment unit. We're going to let senior citizens live there for 15 years. And then at the end of 15 years, we're going to kick them all out. And then we're going to take the granite countertops, the stainless appliances, the tile floor, the elaborate finishes, and then after they're already paid for, we're going to give them back to the developer, and we're going to say, go charge market rates for it. That's what the low-income housing program is.
That's how it works.
It's insane.
I'm not debating that, Senator. I'm not debating.
Okay.
I mean, you and I have filled on this floor for many years, articulating whether this is the best way to spend taxpayers' money or not. The reality is that I don't believe it is. I don't believe that you think it is. I don't believe that we should have an entitlement in the restoration of old buildings when my school district no longer can offer the Parents as Teachers program.
Yeah, when school building and public buildings don't qualify for a historic preservation tax credit.
As you and I both know, and we both share, very rural districts. I have 70 plus schools, all of which have had to cut back transportation routes because the governor has made dramatic cuts to the transportation line item to the schools across the state. What we are trying to do with the Senator from Howe is trying to do with Senate Bill 280 is take what I believe is the first step in bringing at least some structure to some of these programs. And as you know, they at times in low income is one of them. It has essentially been unlimited. Unlimited in that it was tied to the federal tax credit.
Correct.
So whatever the allotment was from the feds, Missouri matched. Now, we matched it dollar for dollar. There are only two states in the nation.
Georgia and us.
Missouri and Georgia that do that. A lot of states match it at 25 cents on the dollar. A lot of states match it at 25 between 25 and 50 cents on the dollar. We don't match any of that. We do it dollar for dollar. And what the Senator from Howe is doing, his proposal, and I believe from the articulation of those who are on that commission, they believe that this new structure is approximately a 30% reduction.
But it's not. You're not even. Oh.
Three senators on the floor. The senator from Stoddard County, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I ask for and seek unanimous consent to introduce special guests.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On your right and on my left here in the gallery, I have some special people with me and with us from Three Rivers Community College, some student ambassadors and also some very key supporters of the college there in Poplar Bluff. And so I would like to introduce and welcome Dr. Devin Stevenson, who's the president of Three Rivers Community College. Also, we have with us Emily Clark Parks, who's the director of development. We also have Bill and Connie Hampton. We have Judy Stevenson, Wilbur Thornton. Judy, of course, is the wife of Dr. Stevenson. And Steve and Patty Boyers, Doug Libla, Megan Keithley, Teresa Johnson, Kathy Richardson, who is the mother of the state representative from Butler County. And glad to have her here. Chris Adams, Casey Walters, Will Doherty, Aaron Smothers, Kaylee Evans, Eddie Justice, Jeff Sean. All of these folks are very much involved in key ways with Three Rivers Community College, which does a great job of providing education to the Southeast region. So I'd like the Senate to please welcome these folks.
Thank you, Senator. I've met Dr. Stevenson myself. I know Three Rivers does a great job. Let's let the Missouri State Senate make the guest of the Senator from Stoddard and the folks from Three Rivers feel welcome this morning. Yes, sir. Senator from Boone.
I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you. Over on my right, on your left, we've got the Randolph County Excel Leadership Group. Excel stands for Experience in Community Enterprise and Leadership Development. This is a program that was put together through Extension back in 1984 out of Moberly, which is one of the great cities in my district. And it's been an outstanding program. It's really served as the format for citizen enrichment programs like Leadership Missouri and Leadership Columbia. They provide to their members programs in leadership development, economics of the community, approaches to economic development, community analysis and planning, local and state government, education, healthcare, population profiles and trends, social services, technologies, telecommunications, and issues in planning and infrastructure. It is just a wonderful program. They are here today as part of that program, and I ask that the body make them feel welcome.
Thank you, Senator. Would the guest from the senator from Boone please rise and be recognized by the Missouri State Senate? Senator from Cape.
Thank you, Mr. President, to continue my inquiry.
Proceed.
And when you closed, Senator, you said that the Tax Credit Commission believes it will recognize moving from a 10-year stream to a five-year stream,
what from 160 percentage? To 80 of approximately a 30% reduction in the overall credits issued.
How does it result in the overall credits issued?
Authorized, whatever term
okay.
you want to use.
All
authorized
right.
is the better word,
well,
here, Senator.
The way that I have that is it's gonna reset the redemption period.
Sure,
so if you're streaming 10 years, see if you can follow. You're streaming 10 years, you get all the way over here, it's 160 million.
Yep.
If you're only streaming 5 years, you roll over here, it's 80. Then you the total is 80. Then you start over sooner and then build to get to the bigger number. So it's the same number, it's just when you're paying it out is less, so you don't have the big hit. And really, it's not until state fiscal year 19
you actually see
that any of that
right.
results in a savings. I mean, can we
yeah.
agree? I mean, that's what Smitty and I went over. And,
I agree
and
that it's multiple years before you recognize the savings.
Right. State fiscal year 19. I mean, we're on 12
we're
right
on 12
now.
12 today.
We're trying to crest 12. So 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. 7 years from now before we get any savings out of this very program of low-income housing, where I alluded to this and I need to correct the record, the low-income housing tax credits in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, Schultz Schools apartments, number of units, 45, residential square feet, 37,446. So we could divide 45 by 37,446 and get the size of the apartments. We used housing tax credits of 6.6 million. We used, that's the state housing tax credits. We used federal housing tax credits to the tune of 6.2 million. We used federal historic preservation tax credits to the tune of 1.7 million. We used the Missouri Historic Preservation Tax Credit to the tune of $2.3 million. We also then threw in what's called an Affordable Housing Assistance Program grant to the tune of $198,767 for a total tax credit liability over 10 years of $16.8 million that breaks down to total development costs of 10.97, so it cost 10.97 to build. We spent 16.8. That's where we talked about 21 cents, 37 cents, we issue
yep.
more. We ate the difference of nearly $6.1 million in the whole inefficiency of the system.
Right.
We didn't need it. We just spent our taxpayer dollars out there for a total tax credit per apartment, $372,907. I wonder if anyone listening or up there realizes that us, the rocket scientists that are elected to represent you in the state of Missouri, have allowed a program to continue that your tax dollars, whether you're young or old, man or woman, grandparent, mother, dog lover, dog hater, whoever you are, that we have a program in this state where we take your money and we allow it to be used in the subsidization of low-income housing. Low-income housing. What a wonderful descriptive term, low-income housing, that in Cape Girardeau at the Schultz Senior Apartments cost taxpayers $372,997 an apartment unit.
And that, Senator, is why in Senate Bill 280 we are stopping the layering of those credits.
Well, the layering of those credits will help, but it still results in this matched program, whether you do it over 5 years or do it over 10 years.
Now, Senator, if you're articulating that you'd like to eliminate the low-income housing program, I understand that.
I've got
completely.
An amendment.
Okay.
I've got an amendment to do
My
that.
Fear is that what you and I are probably willing to eliminate, the majority of the body isn't.
Yeah, and I hear you. And at the end of the day, they can keep looking at all of those kids that are sitting here now, and we can continue to cut their education funding so that we can make the very select few that benefit from low-income housing apartments that cost $372,997. Remember, we already have a $1.3 billion unfunded issued tax credit liability that we got to clean up. We got to pay for this. This happened just 2 years ago. We got 10 years of costs associated to this.
You know what's interesting, Senator? Not that I need to beat this drum any further, but I have a small housing development up in Northwest Missouri, and we're building some 1,400 square foot homes with two car garages on a slab. It's a slab with the 3 foot doors for seniors, etc. Long story made short, fully completed, full energy efficiency in terms of insulation, types of windows, the energy efficiency units, all that kind of stuff. And we're going to have probably somewhere just shy of $130,000 per house. That includes the lot, the infrastructure, everything. And those are 1,400 square foot homes. There is a very strong argument to be made here that the case that you're articulating is clearly a problem. That is why we're trying to address a good chunk of this stuff. And you're right, the low-income housing program is still going to be there when we're done. But as I said earlier, and I still believe today, Senator, the majority of this body is not ready to eliminate that program. And so the best that I know to do is to bring the greatest level of accountability into it with a cap, a sunset. I mean, the mere fact that this program is going to have a sunset that's going to force this body to come back and review it, let's be candid. If we were not going through the difficult economic times that we are today, our ability to be reviewing the credits that we're reviewing now, that we're even having this fundamental debate, probably would not be occurring. I mean, you and I started talking about this in 2007, again in 2008.
Three senators on the floor. Senator from Clay, for what purpose do you rise?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President, and I apologize to my colleagues for interrupting their riveting debate. However, I have a couple of guests that can only stay for a short period of time, so I seek unanimous consent to introduce some very special guests.
Seeing no objection, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. On my left, I have Rebecca Taylor and Roxy Griffin, both from Kansas City. They're here today with the American Cancer Society, where they're very dedicated volunteers. And I would appreciate it if the members of the Missouri Senate would make them feel welcome.
Thank you. Would the guest from the Senator from Clay please rise and be recognized by the Missouri State Senate? Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Thank you, Mr. President. To continue my inquiry with the
Proceed.
Senator from Caldwell.
As I was saying, Senator.
Yes, sir.
You're right. The program will still be there when we're done. The reality is that this body works at the will of the majority. I don't believe the will of the majority is to eliminate the program. If there are amendments to continue to scale it back, restructure it, I'm all in. Count me in. I mean, I believe, I view this program and historic preservation as social credits, although many like to articulate, specifically around the historic preservation, how it has revitalized entire communities. I'm not debating that. It has fundamentally changed the downtown landscape in St. Louis. And you know, that's probably good for St. Louis. But we're also in some times right now where we don't have the resources to be able to do unlimited projects. So we need to start bringing some constraints around these programs. That's what Senate Bill 280 attempts to do, is to bring those constraints.
I would agree with you, Senator, if you didn't put Compete Missouri in there.
Well,
all right?
Absolutely.
Because you had to drop a new substitute in here because the Senate committee substitute had the repeal of the franchise tax in it. And if you left the repeal of the franchise tax, this bill had a positive fiscal note. Now, Senator, in all candidness, I heard people say it's the budget crisis of why we have to adopt this bill. We have to adopt this bill because of the budget crisis. Now, we've already passed the repeal of the franchise tax. So whether you pull it out of this bill or not, I'm scoring it against this bill.
That's fine.
This has a positive fiscal note. We're spending more money in economic development for this bill passing. When you add back in the repeal of the franchise tax, which may be the exact right way to go, but the repeal of the franchise tax and the authorization of Compete Missouri with the retention piece, where we're adopting President Obama's new standard of not jobs created, but jobs saved with government bailouts and cash for clunker programs.
Well, and let me defend why the Compete Missouri was put in as part of the, as part of the sub. Under Compete Missouri, the new structure, as you know, they take five or six programs, they roll them together, they use an aggregate cap that they've then reduced and will grow back over time. But the fundamental component of Compete Missouri that is different than any other tax credit program that we have in our state today is that in order for DED to issue credits, they have to be able to analytically prove they're getting a dollar for dollar return. So I agree, Senator, that by doing Compete Missouri, we are creating a potential for DED to spend or to allocate or to authorize, is the better word, to authorize
more
credits.
No, you'll spend with upfront money.
Okay, that's right. No, there's
you will spend it.
Too. But I don't think that's not in the first year. I think that's like year two or three.
Well, I understand, Senator.
My point, Senator, and I'm not debating that you're right on that. My point is that when you put the provision in that ensures a one-to-one return, that is fundamentally different than issuing social credits where we know we're not getting a one-to-one return.
Yeah, so I hear you. I mean, Senator, believe it or not, I'm the one that came up with the solution when Charlie Shields had us back there trying to get everything done that said, I agree, if you'll make all the social tax credits subject to an appropriations process, and then we can roll these into a Compete Missouri, and then we can argue about the level. Now, you just went with the governor's level here, to take the caps of where quality jobs is at $60 million. Senator, we don't even break $20 million in actual expenditures. But we're saying we spend $60 million in quality jobs?
So that they can authorize up to $60 million. But you
will
know,
spend
Senator,
it in upfront funding.
Wait a minute. Well, okay, Senator, wait a minute. First of all, you know that only a portion of those dollars can be spent in upfront financing.
Not over 4 years.
What's that?
When it's fully phased in, you'll be spending more money.
Okay, so 4 years from now, you're saying? But even at that point, only a portion of it can be upfront financing. They can't use it all for upfront financing.
I understand, but the whole reason they're doing this is quality jobs doesn't work. It doesn't work, Senator. Big, big deal. Right here. It doesn't work. It's a failure.
Wait a minute.
It is a total failure, Senator. We've had Republican and Democrat governors with quality jobs
around the state
that have gone around and said we've created all of these jobs. And then when it boils down to it, at last count and estimate, the net jobs that it recreated, under 2,500.
Okay, but Senator,
under 2,500.
Okay, I agree with that. But here's the fundamental argument of how quality jobs work. What's the repayment mechanism?
I agree.
The repayment mechanism is the job. So
I agree.
Jobs never created. we never pay for it.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree wholeheartedly with the modeling of quality jobs, but because it's back-end financing, it never worked. I agree with you.
Okay.
I agree with you, but to come out and say that quality jobs created jobs, it created virtual jobs. We have a governor that's been flying around the state announcing virtual jobs as real jobs are being closed every day. So with upfront financing and where it is, I agree with. But Senator, when you add the repeal of the corporate franchise tax back into this, like it was in the Senate committee substitute, this has got a positive fiscal note. It doesn't save us any money.
In year four, you're saying. By the time we get to year four, it's positive.
Yeah, even in all the other years. Because your big savings in low-income housing doesn't occur until state fiscal year 19.
Right.
Okay? I mean, we can go through historics. Historics doesn't realize any savings till 16, state right. Fiscal year 15-16?
15, if I remember right. Yeah. In that ballpark. 3 years.
Now, where you do get real savings, and I agree, this is the main place in which savings are realized is the repeal of the circuit breaker for property tax.
The initial
for
savings.
For renters.
That's right. The initial savings into this bill is that. And then everything else comes over time because of the way those programs work.
And if you were to add back in the corporate franchise tax, it results in a positive fiscal note. I mean, that's why we dropped the Senate substitute on top of it, because the differences between the Senate committee substitute and the Senate substitute is just the repeal of the corporate franchise tax is taken out.
Yeah,
that's the only change.
The senator from Howell took it out because we'd already passed that bill.
Well, not because the Senate committee substitute has a positive fiscal note, and now it doesn't have, and now the Senate substitute.
Well, I can honestly tell you this: that was never a discussion that I and the senator from Howell had. So I do not believe that he did it just to change the fiscal note.
Since we've already passed it, you know, one of the things that I've always found curious about this body. And as a former appropriations chair, you know this as well as anyone, that we're during session starting in January trying to craft a budget over here based upon fixed variables, the consensus revenue estimate of what you've got in every other program. Simultaneously, while this is going on the left-hand side, on the right-hand side, we pass bills that cost money. And we never push them in.
That's right.
We never check with anybody. We never go, hey, how are you going to pay for this? And at the end of the day, Senator, we've already passed the circuit breaker, or the franchise property tax repeal. I'm sure that the Senator from the 15th will keep his word. He will not let that get loaded up, and the House is either going to take it or kill it. I happen to agree that the corporate franchise tax is probably something that has outlived its time in this world and needed to go, and I supported it. So I'm not coming at it from that position. What I'm coming at it from is there's a cost. All right? That cost has to be factored in to this bill. And until today, when the Senate substitute was dropped, it was in this bill. So when you add that cost in, and then the cost of Compete Missouri, this has got a positive fiscal note. When we heard at the beginning of the opening, the reason we have to pass this is to save money.
Well, Senator, to be very candid, I mean, not like it's a secret. The reason we put Compete Missouri with it is because no one believes that you're going to get just tax credit reform out of here. No one believes that you're going to get just new programs out of here.
Okay.
That whatever package leaves is going to be a mixed, for lack of a better term, mixed bag.
Well, let's go back to the previous debate that we had, Ford tax credits versus pension reform.
Sure.
The precedent that I set, everyone can see, is at the beginning of the deal, it was going to be 10 to 1. 10 to 1 savings. $1 billion in pension reform savings to the taxpayers of the state of Missouri for $100 million over 10 years to Ford. That's what the original special session was called to do.
Right.
Then we had some blow up over whether or not we were going to have an investment board. The investment board had about $330 million of savings attributed to it. The pension reforms had $670 million of savings. We ended up going with the pension reform version. So instead of 10 to 1 savings, we got 6 to 1 savings. What is the net savings when factored in with the repeal of the franchise tax on this bill?
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head, Senator.
It's not. It's positive.
Okay.
It costs more money, Senator. And can we afford to do that when you and I agree?
Now,
you and I agree on where we find ourselves as it's relative to the transportation line item categorical. I opened our inquiry to see if you had the most counties of anyone here.
I do.
All right, you do.
In every school district in my district, I shouldn't say every, I would be willing to bet 90% of the school districts in my Senate district have had to make reductions in the way either bus routes or the way they deal with transportation because of the governor's drastic cut to the transportation line item.
And our refusal to do anything about it. And at the end of the day, Senator, if we spend more money in the repeal of the corporate franchise tax and in the authorization of new tax credits, that dynamic is going to continue.
So let me ask you a question about your scoring. On your scoring, are you assuming that they're going to allocate or they're going to authorize 100% of the new the new Compete Missouri? Whatever Compete Missouri is, they're going to authorize 100% of it.
I'm factoring in, just like Smitty scored it, which is using 100%. $15 million in year one, $30 million in year two, $45 million in year three, and $60 million in year four. And that this money will be spent relative to like quality jobs, even though it's got a $60 million cap, we never actually spend, although we authorize, we don't spend that amount of money. And that's the difference that I've called virtual jobs from real jobs. The governor will get a signed memorandum of understanding between DED and an employer that wants to come in. He'll immediately fly around the state. And it's not just Governor Nixon. Governor Blunt did this. So it's not a Republican or a Democrat deal. They'll go out and they'll tout X amount of jobs that were just created because of quality jobs. The problem is, Senator, the businesses take a pass. And they don't actually draw down those tax credits because they don't actually create those jobs. And it wasn't, and I'm almost shocked I'm even going to say this, but it wasn't until Virginia Young actually went in at the Post-Dispatch and did and threw an incredible amount of sunshine requests that I even learned that fact.
So we both can
agree. I mean, this is the most troubling day of the Senate. Virginia Young taught me something.
Now, we can both
it's
agree
troubling.
That the investigative reporting of the Star has bettered the state
Post-Dispatch.
In one occasion. I'm sorry, that's right, of the Post. Yeah. In this particular case, maybe bettered the state.
I don't know if it's better that we learned that. And there's a lot of people in the state that wish that article never came out. Those that are receiving these tax credits and have a racket of continuing to move forward.
We're better
but
because
for
it
me,
came out.
I actually learned something in the Post-Dispatch. And
so you spend more time with Virginia, you'll continue to get smarter.
Well, that's the only example I can come up with. So I don't want to over emphasize the journalistic talents that are out there, but I did learn something, and that's something that has driven me to be supportive. And this is the crazy thing, Senator. I am supportive of a Compete Missouri type model. You know, I'm not like the sponsor of this bill. I don't even know, because last year when he was running for U.S. Senate, all of this was bad. Now he's spending more money in a bill than he's actually saving it.
Again, to his defense, one of the reasons, actually not one of, probably the reason that he allowed that to go in is because of the one-to-one component.
Yeah.
I've just heard him talk about it. So in his defense, not that I need to defend him, but I've heard him talk about that numerous times.
Yeah, but at the end of the analysis, what was not acceptable was a 6-to-1 savings to the taxpayers during the special session.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
But now a bill that physically, scoringly, in reality, spends more of the taxpayer dollars in this direction is okay. And that's what I can't wrap my hands around, because, Senator, I'm worried about the transportation line item.
I'm worried.
I have the third largest geographic school district that I have the honor to represent, Jackson School District. It's basically all of Cape County, and unfortunately the county built roads along creeks and stuff, so instead of driving to me to you, they would have to drive to Holt Summit and then to you to go pick you up on a bus. And, you know, we've talked about this, but I think it's very, very important to know that in fiscal year 2011, the General Assembly appropriated $152 million for the transportation categorical line item. $152 million in 11. In July 2010, the governor announced a $70 million withhold on that appropriation, leaving $82 million available to spend for the transportation categorical, or transportation line item. In January 2011, after the House, to their credit, and the current budget chair, Ryan Silvey's credit, they started hammering the governor on that. And the governor miraculously announced that he was going to release $7.5 million of that withhold, so it increased the available transportation categorical line item to $90 million in the current fiscal year. Then, because the House still kept up the pressure, to Chairman Silvey's credit in the House leadership, in February, the governor announced another $10 million release of funds, so it got that level up to $100 million. Still a $52 million withhold, but it's back up to $100 million.
You know what I don't understand about that, Senator? And I mean, I just don't understand this from a constitutional perspective, and for some reason, no one is challenging him on this. The last time I checked, our revenues are not below the
consensus revenue. We got $155 million. The budget that the governor submitted counted $155 million as an artificially created, constitutionally volatile lapse of money.
So I would humbly submit that the withholds of the transportation line item, he does not have the constitutional authority to do that.
Because we're not out of balance.
Because we're not out of balance at this point.
What he has done, Senator, and I agree with
maybe
you.
Maybe he releases it later. I don't know. But today,
I don't think so.
Well,
the House has already spent it.
Well, so
the House has already spent the $155 million that he could release $52 million, or we could put $52 million into the supplemental and just play the one-year shuffle.
I sure hope the Appropriations Chair is listening and he gets that transportation line item back up to fully funded.
Well, I do too. I mean, and Senator, I would agree with you if you could, but I'm not even going to ask that it's fully funded. You know what it costs to fully fund the transportation line item? $222 million.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm fine with the 150.
Yeah. To get it to where we were in 11. Because we've been sitting around here as Republicans and Democrats and politicians alike. We have one unique talent. We have the ability to dislocate our shoulders and wear our arms out, patting ourselves on the back. We go around saying, we've held education funding stable. We're the greatest things in the whole entire world. We've made our commitment to education funding, all this. Uh-uh, Senator. We've eliminated parents as teachers. We've eliminated the career ladder. We've eliminated now transportation line item.
We didn't eliminate them. We've just scaled them back dramatically.
Well, there's no money in the career ladder.
That's correct. My parents as teachers are still there. It's just half the program it was. transportation has been scaled back completely.
To many of the people I represent, because of the scale backs on where they are, we have eliminated the program to them because they can't go see anyone anymore.
Hey, I live it. I'm a living example of a father with a young child who used to be in parents as teachers who, because of reductions, no longer have the ability to be part of it.
So for you, we have eliminated that program.
That's right.
And I think
let me rephrase that. Or maybe where they would visit the home four times a year, this year they'll visit once.
Yeah.
So just a dramatic change in how the process works.
So after the governor's withholds of $52 million, you want to know what's happening in the budget?
What's that?
With transportation line item? The governor in the state of the state recommended $97 million. All right? He released up to $100 million. But he recommended $97 million, so that's a cut of $55 million to the transportation line item, and the House took up and passed the same. So we just cut education funding in the state of Missouri relative to the transportation line item, $55 million, if you serve in the House and voted for House Bill 2.
Here's the real debate, Senator, and it goes in with your spending argument here. It's going to happen. I mean, I think that this body as a whole are going to have to make some tough decisions going forward. But even as it relates to tax credits, the senator from Howe has put forward his proposal and how he believes we should begin the reform process. But I asked this in caucus today, and I don't think you were there at the time. I asked this in caucus today and was not given an answer. He would not reply, said he wasn't sure, and I believe he's not sure, that there's a proposal floating around here to spend approximately $500 million on the China Hub project in St. Louis.
Yeah.
No one has yet been to meet with me about it, but if we are gonna make that kind of a commitment, now in all fairness, that is $500 million over the next 15 years. So approximately somewhere north of $30 million per year, if you average it. If we're gonna make that type of a commitment before we get parents as teachers funded, or we fund the transportation line item, or we fund all the other things in the budget that we have seen dramatic reductions in, and let's not forget, Senator, this budget is not yet balanced. We're still living on federal money.
$755 million projected deficit next year.
And I put together,
if we take the $189 million,
I put together some good government proposals to bring some reforms to DNR and some of these other programs. Other departments, I believe the director of DNR is setting up in the gallery. But the reality is we haven't taken the steps yet to bring the reforms necessary to bring the budget into balance. We have proposals floating around here to spend hundreds of millions of dollars. And while I understand the opportunity before us, the reality is these types of things need to go through a very thorough process. And I hope that we all understand in here, as we make those types of commitments and or the commitments we're making in this proposal under Compete Missouri, that we understand that if we don't do this in a one-to-one relationship, then we have committed to fund something else before funding our primary responsibilities of schools, roads, bridges, all those things that go with it. And Senator, the reason I bring all this up is because as you're articulating the challenges that still exist in the appropriations budget, the reality is that, you know, we now have approximately 8 to 10% of general revenue that is spent off the books. And when I say off the books, I mean
I thought it
tax
was 12.
Credits.
Well, if it was 12%.
If you assume that we're gonna redeem somewhere around $500 million, then we're gonna have approximately 6.8 to 7 billion.
The last projections I saw for next fiscal year is that we're gonna redeem $681 million.
Okay, I have not seen that, Senator.
Okay.
Understood.
I agree. It's hard to get your hands around it because it's not in an appropriations process.
Well, there's no one place that you can get your hands around all this.
There's no accountability. There's no oversight.
It's
an amoeba. That's why I'm so disappointed yet again, why for the social aspects, I get, and I think there's a median, and I think that there's a give on the one-to-one aspect at a minimum. Now, the retention deal, give me a break, but...
Hey, I think it's an interesting debate. I mean, you know, there's a proposal floating around here from Kansas City. Kansas City has come forward with
a proposal.
Yeah, but
they're the Burns and McDonald's of the world, where we've been bribing Burns and McDonald's with special earmark legislation ever since the House was rolling.
Not so much the Burns and McDonald component, but they just have a general component that I saw yesterday. Maybe the senator from the...
Seventh.
Nope. The 8th.
8th. Oh, 8th. That's right. Yeah.
The center from the 8th, I know, it was looking at a proposal that Kansas City had brought forward that essentially said that the state would forego 95% of the state withholding taxes for 10 years for any company that would stay in Missouri. So my question to him was, what is the local government foregoing? Are they going to eliminate or waive the earnings tax for that company?
Nope.
I mean, there's a point, and I would argue this. I would articulate whether it's low-income housing, whether it's historic preservation, whether it's a retention component. If the state of Missouri is going to forego a large portion of our revenue stream, the local government should do the same.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what happens is the state government keep subsidizing and funding local developments. And we can't do that. We can't even fund schools, Senator.
Right.
That's why some type of tax reform, tax credit reform, I believe is imperative. And it's not going to fix it overnight. Man, I'll be the first person to admit
that.
Well,
here's the idea that I have, Senator. And we've only talked about low-income housing. To tell you the truth, I know exactly what you're doing.
I know.
You to explain it. You got the $84 million cap on historics. I like what you're doing, fiddling around on the other smaller tax credits. It makes sense. Those are actually net reductions, and they all make sense. Quite candidly, the Compete Missouri is a problem to me. The retention $6 million is a joke to me. Kansas City and Independence and all of them notwithstanding, I'm not going to go down the route of yet again like we did in Ford and give $100 million to Ford and it doesn't create one new job. Well, it's a saved jobs package.
Here's
regardless of how much
Senator.
Money they now invest into the state and capital because the franchise tax is gone, so we don't even get any revenue based upon that capital expenditure anymore.
Now, Senator, in all fairness, part of this debate about retention and the part that is concerning to me is that the PEAK program is the Kansas equivalent to Quality Jobs that's taking businesses from Missouri into Kansas. The PEAK program was created in response to the Quality Jobs program. So Missouri created Quality Jobs, which increased the number of businesses coming to the Missouri side versus the Kansas side. So a couple years later, Kansas creates the PEAK program.
Only a little over 2,000 jobs were even attributable to Quality Jobs.
Well, the perception is that jobs are being moved from...
Is a great point, Senator, because what's driving all of this is perception and not reality.
That's right. But the reality that we live in, Senator, is because of that perception, we are having to deal with this legislation.
Senator, I am here to stand and say to God, country, and Missouri Senate, the emperor has no clothes.
I understand.
Let's break the perception and deal with reality. Kansas and Missouri can continue to do this like the whatever number of municipalities in St. Louis used to tiff Target stores from each other. And all they've done is just spend billions of dollars for nothing.
Well, if
tiffing a Walmart six blocks,
if this governor wants to be a real leader, get in the real leader, either get in the car or he prefers to fly, so fuel up the plane and go to Topeka and work out a deal with Governor Brownback where these two states will stop warring. Because the reality is it's doing nothing for the region as a whole. and all it does is continue to erode tax base to both states.
Yeah, but Senator, you want to know what economic policy built Mission Hills, Kansas?
Yeah.
Built all of that.
There too.
It's called the earnings tax.
And the school system,
and
Senator.
The school system. Absolutely. It has nothing to do with economic
I have a lot of friends that live in Kansas, and they will tell you, they're all our age, they all have young kids, and they will tell you there's two things they don't want. They don't want to pay their earnings tax, and they don't want their kids in a school system that's failing. And that's partially the fault of those who came before us to let those districts get in that situation.
You know, I totally agree. You know what the senator from the third said, and we may have a breakthrough here. Because of the choke job that the Jayhawks did at the end of the NCAA bracket tournaments in where they're at, the Kansas governor is probably available this weekend.
That's great news. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Very insightful point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I'm with you. I hear you. But we want to take what these cities have done. And Senator, there was a time probably 6 years ago, you remember this proposal where somebody was going to call economic development, where we were actually going to take money, and I think it was when you were appropriations chair, where the solution to the earnings tax problem was just take GR and from the state and then just make the cities whole.
Right.
Senator, in essence, by all of these other tax credit programs and what Kansas City, Missouri says about Kansas City, Kansas, is because the city leaders of Kansas City refuse to change that which they have control over.
But you know what, Senator? It's going
to
be.
And so then they come to Jeff City and they say, hey, Cape people that don't get any of this stuff except for the connected few that get the low-income housing and all of this other junk, Cape people, poor Joe that owns Cape Bicycle that hasn't ever gotten a tax credit or a subsidy in his whole entire life, all he does is employ 11 people and tries to sell weightlifting equipment, exercise equipment, and bicycles to people. Those are the people that make it day in and day out. Never hired a lobbyist. You know, only hires a lawyer when he has to, only hires an accountant when he has to, that doesn't have the resources to come up here and sell us a perception that without these tax credits, somehow Missouri's going to suffer. Senator?
Now, Senator, back to just, I want to finish this circle.
Okay.
Right now, historically, it has been the elected officials in Kansas City who have been reluctant to do anything with the earnings tax. But the voters now get to make a decision next week.
Mm-hmm.
And my prediction is the voters are going to renew that tax in both St. Louis and Kansas City.
Yep.
Now, when that happens, at that point, the voters will have spoken. Thus, my argument of if we are going to continue to even entertain ideas of job retention to try to stop this border war, and actually you're not stopping the border war, you're just throwing more money at it, then there has to be, I would actually argue, the largest component should be a local component, not the state component, because I fundamentally do not believe it's the fault of the banker in Bethany whose taxes are now being used to save or retain the business in Kansas City. And I don't understand, and my constituents don't understand how that is good economic policy.
I'm totally with it.
It's a pretty good argument.
Yeah.
So while I understand why the senator from the 8th is going to take the big government initiative he's about to take on, which is very ironic for a guy who's been standing on the floor against
unemployment. It's happened before here, hasn't it?
No, it does. He's a guy who stood on the floor against unemployment benefits, a guy who stood on the floor, I'm not sure where he is on the education money, but a guy who's portrayed himself as a less government type of elected official. He's about to, once again, take more from state government to try to stop a problem. And to be candid, Senator, all we're doing is the exact same thing that the circuit breaker property tax credit did, which is we're not fixing the problem. We're covering our eyes and throwing state money to fix a local problem.
And
if they wanted to fix this, the real issue behind the circuit breaker tax credit is as older people were having trouble paying their tax bills because local government
St. Louis County was
jacking up the rates.
Yeah, drive-by assessments. And
what ended up happening was the state government said, okay, our solution is to subsidize it.
Yeah.
That's not good public policy. That only in many cases, I would actually argue that is actually allowed the problem to continue versus addressing the underlying issue.
And totally.
That's what the senator from the 8th is going to do today.
Totally. I mean, if parents subsidized D's instead of A's, we would have more D's in the world than A report cards. How many parents would actually roll out there and their kid presents their report card at the end of the quarter and looks at it and says, all right, you got 4 A's, you're grounded for 4 weeks. 3 D's, here's $100, keep up the good work. But that's what we do. The earnings tax in the Kansas City schools are a D. And then they don't want to address any of it. And they come to the state, and us as Mama Bear goes, you know what? Don't do anything that gets you an A in your homework for local governance or anything else. Keep doing this D policy. Here's $100. Senator, if you subsidize bad behavior, you're going to get more of it.
I agree.
And that's my fundamental problem with this bill. We're not addressing it. We're contributing to it.
Okay. Before I'm going to have to go, I have some constituents here, but I want to, before I close, I want to, before you end this inquiry, because you actually have the floor.
Sure.
I want to leave you with this thought. You and I fundamentally agree that in a perfect world, we would not be in this business of subsidizing, picking winners and losers. It is bad public policy. The reality is until every state unilaterally disarms, we have to continue to fight. And I don't like it. It's horrible.
No, I agree.
And
I
so
agree.
I'm open to any thoughts or ideas that you have, Senator. But
totally agree.
What I would ask is this. I believe we have got to keep this process moving forward. I look forward to your thoughts and ideas. A couple of the amendments that you've thrown, I like. Because we have got to make tough decisions in every aspect of government, including tax credits, if we're going to fix the long-term health of our fiscal situation in this state.
I appreciate that.
Thank you
for
Senator.
The inquiry, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Can I inquire the senator from Clay?
Does the senator from Clay yield? Is she in the chamber?
Nope.
I don't see her. So we need the senator from Clay, who has the bill on the floor, to come back in the chamber.
No. He's charter, and I assume I'm a charter customer. Now, he might say you're not. I don't know. But I wonder if they could install it tomorrow or Friday. I can have somebody meet him here. Right. And this apparently, that's all.
The senator from Clay is entering the chamber. Senator, there is an inquiry. Do you yield to the senator from Cape Girardeau for inquiry?
I'd sure like to have some lunch, but I guess I'll yield.
Thank you, Senator.
Proceed.
I think you have an amendment that's pending.
It yes, and if you would allow me, I would actually withdraw it because
perfect.
I've talked
perfect.
With a couple of people.
Perfect.
Mr. President.
Thank you.
Senator.
I would like to withdraw my amendment.
Send the amendment back.
Thank you.
Senator. From Howell.
Mr. President, I ask this bill be placed upon the informal calendar.
Bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from 23rd.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you ask the Secretary if there are messages from the House, and if there are, would you please have them read?
Are there messages from the House? Affirmative. Read the messages from the House.
Mr. President, I'm instructed by the House of Representatives to inform the Senate that the House has taken up and passed House Committee Substitute for House Bill 1, an act to appropriate money to the Board of Fund Commissioners, etc. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 2, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the State Board of Education and Department of Elementary and Secondary Education. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 3, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, funds, and distributions of the Department of Higher Education. Also, House Committee substitute for House Bill 4, an act to appropriate money for the expenses, grants, refunds, and distributions of the Department of Revenue, Department of Transportation, et al., in which the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Respectfully, Daniel Adam Crumless, Chief Clerk.
Senator.
Mr. President, without objection, Senator, to the order of business of announcements.
Announcements. Senator from Lawrence.
Committee on Judiciary will meet immediately upon adjournment in SCR 2.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Committee on Agriculture, Food Production, and Natural Resources will meet immediately upon adjournment in SCR 1.
Senator from Johnson.
On education will begin promptly at 1:30 in the Senate lounge.
Thank you, Senator. Further announcements? Senator from 23rd.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate stand in recess until 3 p.m. this day.
You've heard the motion. Those approving say aye.
Aye.
Lori, hey, Dempsey.